Welcome to the Spirituality What? Podcast, where we explore the mysteries, joys, and challenges of being spiritual beings navigating our unpredictable human experience we call life here on planet Earth. I'm your friendly guide, Rebecca, ready to jump into our adventure of the day. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Spirituality What? I am Rebecca. I'm excited for the part one of our two-part episode, Spiritual Journeys, Insights from the Ojibwe Tradition. It's going today, and we are going to speak to somebody that I was really excited to meet. His name is James, and the reason I wanted to do this episode is because my husband is a descendant of Grand Traverse Band from the Ojibwe tribe, and so this episode has a little bit of a special place in our hearts, and I was excited to meet James. I came across James on Instagram, actually, and he is a descendant of Turtle Mountain and is a renowned international speaker, digital creator, and actually the author of The Seven Generations and the Seven Grandfather Teachings. His keen insights were developed through speaking with and recording elders and native language speakers across North America as part of the Ojibwe Language Dictionary Project. For 20 years, he has facilitated community language tables, consulted with public and private organizations on language and cultural programs, and traveled internationally as a keynote speaker. And I just reached out to him on Instagram and said, hey, here's where we're at. This is my podcast. Do you want to be on it? And he agreed. So we just met each other kind of for the first time in the prep for this podcast, and I'm really excited. We talk a lot about James's book. In this episode, we talk a little bit about his rock bottom and what it was like going back to this elder wisdom. We talk about something called the good life and the all my relatives saying, and the seven generations and what it is to be Anishinaabe. So we're going to jump in today. Thanks for joining, and here we go. All right. Welcome back, everybody, to the Spirituality What podcast. I am Rebecca, and I am here today on this wonderful weekday talking to our next guest, James, about spirituality and Ojibwe spirituality specifically, and how that relates to being spiritual beings in these physical bodies. So, James, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Aho, bonjour in the noi morganadok, anin. Kagi Gabo and Dishinikas, Mikanak and Dudem, Mikanak Wajawing and Dunjaba, Beshoka Kabakong and Danongong, Apajigomi Gwech Bizendaoyeg. And that was a protocol greeting, a traditional Ojibwe protocol greeting. I said, hello, all of my relatives. My name is Kagi Gabo. I'm also James Vukulich. I'm Turtle Clan. I'm a descendant of Turtle Mountain. I live close to Minneapolis today, and I wanted to thank you all for listening this today. Miigwech. Thank you.
Awesome. Yes. So, James, one of the things that we like to do on this podcast, it's consistent across all of the podcasts, all the episodes with the different interviewees, which is I want to ask you, what does spirituality mean to you?
I thought about this in depth. I saw the question. And I think for me, the one that most that resounds on a personal level, came from Vine Deloria Jr. He's an indigenous scholar, theologian, and he had the famous line that religion is for people who are scared of hell. Spirituality is for people who have already been through it. And for me, on a personal note, that was my experience.
Interesting. I don't think I've ever heard that one before. I like that. I like that a lot.
And he's an indigenous scholar. He's a brilliant Lakota scholar. And it was the first time I read it, I'm like, religion is for people who are afraid of hell. Spirituality is for people who had been there, been through hell. And that was my experience. I had gone through a very dark chapter, and it wasn't like necessarily a religion. It was a spiritual awakening for me that,
absolutely,
that really came through that experience with me.
Yeah, that is really interesting. We've talked about trauma before on this podcast specifically, and actually you talk about trauma in your book as well, in intergenerational trauma. So maybe that's a good place to start. So James wrote a book It's really cool. It's called The Seven Generations and the Seven Grandfather Teachings. And so, James, let's start there. Maybe tell us a little bit about the book.
The book is based on a talk I had been doing for probably 10 years. And these were teachings. I was just mentioning a dark period in my life. It was during that dark period, I was faced with the decision of having to leave what I considered my vocation of teaching the Ojibwe language, teaching Ojibwe culture and history. I could no longer afford to do it. I had been chronically underemployed. And I had impoverished myself, I'd impoverished my family. And I was at this point in my life where I'd given myself an ultimatum and said, okay, this is it. This is your last semester. You can still have an Ojibwe in your life every day. You can still study on your own time. You don't have to teach it or be in the community. You can still have it there. But if you had one last opportunity to talk about things, what would you do? What would you teach?
What
And
would
I
you
thought,
say?
well, I would go over some of these concepts that Elder shared with me. And I had never had an opportunity to really do. I had taught so much language acquisition, the grammar, which is dear to my heart. I love it. But there were these cultural and spiritual teachings that I wanted to share. And I thought I would do that. And it would be just a little bit later, I'd give my first ever Seven Generations and Seven Grandfather Teachings talk. And it was incredibly well received, and I couldn't wait to do it again. And I had been informed by those teachings because they had really pulled me out of that dark period in my life. So I thought, well, I'm going to give this another try. And then I, yeah, for 11 years maybe, continued to do those as a talk. I was really leaning into the oral tradition at the time. Indigenous people have We have thousands of years of an oral tradition in our DNA to speak to people, to be with one another, to discuss. And I thought, I'm going to lean into that rather than write this down. And so it would become, I would write it down in 2021 after yet another really difficult year.
So you mentioned this dark period and kind of going back to these things that you learned from the elders. So maybe can you talk a little bit about like your spiritual journey and how you maybe came to these learnings to begin with before you were starting to share them with everybody?
Yeah, well, again, I had reached a point in my life that, I think rock bottom is different for all sorts of people. Everyone will have a unique
Totally.
experience with that.
Yeah, it's very
This one,
subjective.
it really is. This one, my career was nowhere near where I wanted to be in my mid-30s. My relationships were frayed. The people I held very close to me, again, not very strong relationships at the time. I had a great loss in my life. My mother-in-law had passed away from cancer. And that was devastating. That was devastating for everyone involved. It was heartbreaking. And at this point, I was just like, all right, well, where do I go from here? What I had been doing led me to this point. I was also, I always like to mention this. I was terribly addicted to smoking cigarettes at the time as well. I had just during this entire period, I had, of course, had another failed attempt to abandon these. And I was like, all right, well, where will I go from here? What are the next steps? I was dealing with the crippling anxiety, a financial hardship, being chronically
Totally.
underemployed, heartbreak, loneliness. And I'm like, where will I go? And I went back to these. I tried to think of the first time last time I'd been really, really genuinely happy. And I went back to the things I was reading and I was studying back then, ancient Greek philosophers. I went back to the Tao Te Ching. I started looking at other people who had dealt with those fundamental human problems of anxiety, of fear, of sadness, of loss, of sorrow. And when I was reading them, I thought, oh, this reminds me of the teachings the elders shared with me. Some of them were like with truth, Yes. In the book, I describe truth as, I cannot define the eternal to you. And for me, I was looking through the Tao Te Ching, a book I hold in very high esteem. And it was like, the Tao that can be spoken of is not the true Tao. And I thought, well, that's very much the same as what these wise elders were sharing with me.
Absolutely.
And I thought, well, I'm going to look in depth. And the more I found in these other spiritual traditions, I found that our people had been talking about the same thing, in some cases for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, I'm going to try that. I'm going to try seeking out Minpo Matsuen, the good life, a life of peace, a life of balance, life where I'm not living with conflict with my relatives and my environment, life without contradiction, where I'm saying one thing and then doing another, a holistic life. And that's where I really began. And it worked. It worked incredibly well. The only way I could have written this book was if it had worked on a personal level.
Absolutely.
Rather than expounding philosophically, maybe selling something. It was like, no, this was my experience. It worked for me. I wouldn't tell you about it otherwise.
Yeah.
And so.
Is it accurate to say then that you knew about these teachings, you kind of knew about this in a spiritual context, but it hadn't really hit home then until you experienced these dark times? Or were you a relatively spiritual person before?
No, I was very secular.
Oh, okay.
In all of my approaches at that time in my life, despite all of the spiritual teachings in the language, my approach to it was very secular. It was, you know, how can we get more people to learn and use the language? Yep. And, you know, there are very scientific ways to do that.
Yeah, totally.
And that had been totally my approach. And I was like, well, I'll leave ceremony and the spiritual talk and the spiritual discussions with the elders I had learned from. In fact, when I looked at myself and compared myself to them, I was like, anyone who would listen to me would be getting ripped off.
Like, I'm not worth, that's not me. Yeah. To the elders. Yeah.
There's no possible way I could do what they did. They were brilliant. They were insightful. They were, again, they were very deeply spiritual people. And I felt like you'd be getting shortchanged if you heard this from me. Go talk to them.
Yeah.
They're the ones you want to ask these questions or have these discussions with.
Yeah.
And, that was, that's where I was at until that period, until I started looking for answers in middle age.
In these dark times, in your middle age, you came to these old grandfather teachings, which I think are like fundamental to any spiritual conversation. When I read the book, I was like, look, this is exactly, I believe every single thing in this book. I think it's amazing. You mentioned truth. So there's humility, respect, love, bravery and courage, honesty. And then the last chapter is like wisdom and intelligence, but I think enlightenment was mentioned kind of in the chapter as more of an appropriate kind of word for that. You mentioned the good life, which was also kind of on my list. So I would love for you to talk about the all my relatives, the word or the saying. I don't want to butcher that. I'm not going to say it because it was hard enough to just read it. I was like, I think I would totally butcher this, but. And then also the use, I think it's grandparent and grandchild as well in that concept where like the words are the same. So if you could talk like a little bit about that, I think it sets the foundation for the, at least from my perspective in reading this book, like kind of the Ojibwe approach to just how everything works.
Absolutely. No, in that word,
it's long.
Don't blame you at all. When you look at it, on the paper, it takes up half of the page in Dinoway Maganadok.
It's intimidating.
All of my relatives. And the original, and the other word you mentioned is one I'll speak about tonight in Danako Bichigan. And this was during that period where I was examining myself, I was examining my life, I was practicing, you know, in-depth awareness on it on a daily basis, scrutinizing myself. Or observing myself is probably kinder, more appropriate.
It is kinder.
I thought of what that word really meant. And it can mean my great grandparent, can mean my great grandchild, and it can also mean my ancestor. But when you look at what the word really means, and this was part of my scientific background in linguistics, it has an unic, which is a morpheme that means interconnected, interlinked in a sequence. So that great grandparent, great grandchild, or ancestor, if we spiritually interpret that word, it really means that being I'm inextricably interconnected to, that being I'm inextricably linked to. And whatever I do has the potential to affect them, and whatever they do has the potential to affect me. This was, when I looked at it logically, 7 generations. If you count great-grandparent to yourself and then to your great-grandchild, you have 7 generations, past, present, and future, mm-hmm. punctuated intergenerationally by this concept of I'm inextricably linked to you. And whatever I do has the potential to affect you. And that really brought up a shift in my perspective on how I was acting. At the time, I had been, I think like many people, self-centered, been really concerned about my own ambitions and my own goals in my mid-30s and what those meant to me. And I had not really taken a perspective of, oh, my actions have the potential to affect someone I'll never meet, speak to, listen to, or hold. It could potentially affect someone 7 generations from now. Mm-hmm. So it began to shift the perspective from me to we, if you will. When I say we, it's really that Gidina Wendeman. We are all related. One of the first times I heard that talk, I was discussing this with a traditional elder from Treaty 3, and he had mentioned that when he was growing up, he rarely heard elders use that term "neen," I, me, myself.
Yes, you talked about this in the book too. I love this. It's very interesting.
And they would try to avoid it in an everyday conversation. And when I had translated "neen" into Latin, it translates as ego, I, me, myself. And what they were trying to do, by example, was say that this idea of I, me, myself may be an illusion. Mm-hmm. That idea of I, because I'm inextricably interconnected to my relatives. Correct. For them, the spiritual teaching was only the kind spirit, the benevolent mystery, the creator, God, if you will, uses that word I, excluding you. Mm. Human beings don't. We're all connected. We're all related. And that's when they use that term, Indinoi Makinadok, when you're addressing them, all of my relatives. So at that point, there was this brilliant shift in my perspective from just me, myself, my ambitions, my goals, my prejudices, my judgments, my worries, my sorrows, my joys, to I am all of my relatives. And all of a sudden, there was this deep feeling emerging from within me, which must have been the birth of responsibility. Mm. Because I had, for me, scientific and spiritual proof that everything I do is going to affect all of my relatives. My question was no longer, why am I here? Why was I born? It became how. How do I live in a way that can bring peace and balance to my relatives? I can bring peace and balance to myself. If I'm bringing it to my relatives, I'll bring it to myself. Vice versa. If I bring peace to myself, will I affect all of my relatives? That's when I began seeking out an answer to that. And there it was in front of me. The good life. And how to do that? Follow these sacred laws, follow these grandfather teachings.
Yeah. So I want to just make a point, and we can talk about this as well. I watch all your videos online that I can find. Like every time they come up, I always watch them, because one of the things that I find as a very big difference, and this may just be Ojibwe language in general, maybe cultural or spiritual, I'm not sure. So I'm interested in your thoughts on that, but the intentional language is insane. When you, for example, you had a video recently about the word old woman in English, which is like almost derogatory, old woman. But when you broke down all of the different parts of the word, which again, I can't remember what it was exactly, but when you broke down all the different parts of the word, it was something like that woman who takes care of the community or takes care of the family or something. It had like this super much deeper meaning and also much nicer. Like a lot of the words you talk about, it's like, it's just so intentional and so deep compared to what I feel like I'm saying when I'm speaking English all the time. What are your thoughts on that?
Mindamuye, the old woman. Again, the one who's holding us all together.
Yes,
that minj, it's to hold. And the uye is the being. She's the one who's holding us all together. Our families, our clans, our communities, ultimately the nation. When you look at the role of grandma, she does that. You know,
yeah.
She's bringing a lot of wisdom, a lot of care, a lot of affection, a lot of insight into the ceremony of everyday life. And to celebrate that. When I thought of those at that time, what would you talk about if this were your last time working with the language? And that was one of them. I'd like, there are all of these beauties and these jewels in the language that I would love to share with people. Not just see the translation in the dictionary, but an interpretation.
Yeah.
And to share that feature of a language that has such a strong oral tradition in it. When we share some of these words, I think that we're talking about a 13,000 year investment in us as human beings. Some of these ancient words like nokumas, my grandmother, which I think we can make a strong case that that dates back to prior to the beginning of the last ice age. What those words mean. And so I would just to have that chance to share those and again, to really know the words you're saying, really understand the words you're using and what they really mean, I think can be very powerful.
Okay. So then I have a question. So you were saying you were teaching the Ojibwe language, which,
yes,
according to your book, you didn't grow up with and you started learning in your 20s. So you were teaching the Ojibwe language, which to me is spiritual by definition. Every single example of the sort of how words can be interpreted, maybe not translated from that perspective, but like when you break down each parts of the word, every time I hear you break down a word, I'm like, well, that's all about connection and source and love and kindness, and which is, it's to me kind of very spiritual. Do you find that like Ojibwe people are more spiritual by nature than non-Native Americans?
Or no.
Wait, no. Still kind of goes both ways.
When we look at that word for nowadays, it can mean indigenous person, but I think its pre-contact meaning was human being. It's Anishinaabe. It's Anishinaabe. So I know we use that for ourselves as an indigenous people, but again, I think its pre-contact meaning is human being. That with all of our relatives, that could be the Mi'kta'guq, the trees, the Giguiug, the fish, the Awasiug, the four-legged, the Munadunsug, the insects, the Asinig, the grandfathers, the stones. And all of those were the human beings. We're not more than, less than, we're all related. We are just the humans. And I think any human being falls under that category on a personal level. Speaking to my namesake and you know, a deeply spiritual, insightful woman, Ida Downwind, we're talking about that. And we're like, no, that's got to mean human being. Because if we look at these teachings from a holistic perspective, if they work for Anishinaabe, for Ojibwe people, Ojibwe speaking people, they need to work for all human beings, or they're not what we think they are.
Yeah.
So.
Are there a lot of people in your tribe and your hometowns and stuff that are also religious, like from the standard context of religion?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, when you mentioned that I didn't hear the language until I was in my 20s, and I wrote about that in my book, there's a very good reason for that. My mother and my grandmother and my uncles all went to residential and boarding schools. They went to it's total institutions. It's a sociological term. It's a place where the clothes you wear, the food you eat, the books you read, when you go to church, the language you speak, when you go to bed, when you go to the bathroom, all these things are determined for you by the institution. Mm-hmm. And we all know of two perfect examples here in the United States, at least, and all over the world, the military and prison. So they had no access at all to indigenous culture, history, or spirituality. And those, their mandate, and people were upfront about this. Their mandate was to kill the Indian in order to save the man. And so you have a lot of children at this time who are 4, 5, and 6 and removed from their homes who have one spiritual path, one exclusively, and that could be Episcopalian, that could be Lutheran, that could be Roman Catholic. It depends on what denomination was running the boarding school where you were.
Gotcha.
And
Gotcha.
so for so many people to hold on to those teachings, despite for many the disastrous effect that the boarding schools and residential schools had on their life, that was their exclusive way of expressing, those deep spiritual yearnings. I think every
Yep.
Anishinaabe, every human being has.
Yeah.
So for them to have that, it's for me totally understandable.
Yeah.
Totally. And to have
Absolutely.
no access to indigenous spirituality, which was illegal until 1978. Ojibwe spiritual traditions, and not just Ojibwe exclusively, but indigenous spiritual traditions had to go underground under fear of persecution and prosecution. Like you could be literally arrested for 30 to 90 days and for practicing indigenous spirituality until 1978.
I was like, that's not even that long ago.
It isn't. I was 3 years old, and so it's like
Wow.
it's very real in our lives that the after effects of the boarding school of spiritual prosecution and persecution. And you think about, oh, well, why wouldn't people just go back to their indigenous ways? Well, the indigenous ways had gone underground in order to survive. So they maintained, but they were done with great discretion. They were done very quietly because if someone heard about them, then the person who was hosting that ceremony could be arrested. You'd have their children taken away from them. They could lose their livelihood, and you didn't want to be the person to do that. So there's a great deal of secrecy about indigenous spirituality until very recently.
That is a wrap for today. I am excited to share more about my conversation with James in next week's episode. So stay tuned and we will see you next week. Thank you for joining me on today's Spirituality What? Adventure. Subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast. Visit us on Instagram at spirituality.what to interact. Tell us what spirituality means to you, and even provide some of your own personal musings. Human on, you phenomenal spiritual beings.